Fitzwilliam Museum is a, without question, a gem. But in the words of its director, a decade ago, it had come to be seen as a dry and dusty establishment which was half open half of the time. It is not thought of that way now. If we were able to ask Anthony how the change came about, he would doubtless talk of the government's designation challenge fund, the strengthening of the Friends of the Fitzwilliam, the dedication of the museum staff, and the leadership of its director. When others talk about those times, they invariably invoke Anthony's own name. It is a characteristic of university fundraising work that the successes are most often a product of teamwork between academics and professional fundraisers. The assignment of Anthony Tootle to the Fitzwilliam Museum in the early years of the Development Office was an inspired act that gave rise to an extraordinarily successful team. Anthony's love of the arts found a natural outlet in the great treasures of that place. And he fully understood that a museum could be fun. For the 150th anniversary of the museum's foundation, a party was thrown that was pure Anthony. As the director tells it, the galleries filled with people and with light, and, of course, with music. All this was Anthony's element, and Anthony in his element. But let us step back for a moment and consider the context when Anthony joined the Development Office in January 1995. In that office's first brochure a few years earlier, just six departments out of some hundred or so sought funds. Few saw a role for philanthropy. Seeking funds was a distraction at best, and distasteful or plain unpleasant at worst. That changed dramatically. And today, virtually every department and faculty and center in the university has projects and ambitions on which it works or hopes to work with CUDO. Anthony Tootle was one of the small handful of people who set that transformation in motion. He was brilliant. Even the most introverted and mistrustful could be weaned from imagining fundraising as a grubby pursuit when Anthony was its embodiment. His intelligence and decency, and above all his charm, helped make development respectable at Cambridge. Anthony helped Cambridge to help itself. As a result, he left his mark on important parts of this university and on some of the university's key relationships. The gallery refurbishments, and in particular the courtyard development at the Fitzwilliam, were a matter of great pleasure and pride to Anthony. His legal training made him the ideal person to work with the executors of the exceptional legacy of Dr. Herschel Smith. And I've heard him speak with quiet satisfaction as he watched the Herschel Smith chairs being filled one by one. As acting and deputy director of the Development Office, Anthony worked with top-level donors and the most important trusts and foundations. The stewardship of those relationships was safe in his hands. He was such a genial man, so easy to speak to, so easy to like and grow fond of, that everyone enjoyed their conversations and their time with him. I have been deeply touched by the messages I have received from donors sharing their sadness at his death. I believe that Antony too would be touched, but I also dare say that he would have laughed and been pleased, because surely the highest accomplishment of a fundraiser and the greatest test of character is to be loved by people, even as you are persuading them to part company with their money. I believe Antony found exactly the right job. In the early days, when the call for fundraising fell largely on deaf ears, he remained an unshakable optimist, never discouraged. He enjoyed working the room. His memory was encyclopedic for people and for the links between them and between them and Cambridge. That talent for remembering was an asset he exploited, not ruthlessly, that's the last word that could be used about Antony, but creatively and joyfully. He knew, it seemed, absolutely everyone, the movers and shakers of town and gown, and the people who caused them to move and to shake, and the names of their children and the names of their pets. All this he knew and remembered because he took such deep pleasure in people. He loved gossip, and he had a great gift for understanding what really mattered to people. He also loved grand events and particularly loved a crisis, and so he was in his element when the two came together. In 1999, for example, the opportunity to use St. James's Palace for an event dropped into his lap with a month's notice. I am told that Antony rose to the occasion in a flash and pulled off an absolutely splendid gathering from nothing at all. The annual admission of donors to the Guild of Benefactors was largely shaped by Antony, and he carefully planned the ceremony each year with the events team, even to the extent of copying the menu in his own kitchen to test which wines went best with the quail's eggs. Antony's relationship to the staff of the development office had a family feel. It was as if he were everyone's uncle. The staff sought his advice, not as a line manager, but as a wise person who was always, sometimes infuriatingly, right. In recent weeks, one member of the team has said that when his ill health took him away from the office, we all felt we had to grow up. He wasn't there to ask anymore. But like the best of uncles, Antony wasn't just a source of wisdom and advice. He was fun. He was special. He was the star turn in the office, comparing quizzes in his polka dot bow tie, taking immense pride in his elegant and impossibly uncomfortable Morgan, immaculate in British racing green. He was entirely at home in an office which each Friday would decree a certain theme of dress, tartan for St. Andrew's Day, animal prints for summer. One must also note that in certain matters, Antony was entirely at sea and wholly dependent upon others. He wasn't the world's greatest administrator, for example, and I'm told he tended to respond to the challenges of the technical revolution with, quote unquote, a helpless bleating noise. On the other hand, Antony took any opportunity to sing in his rich tenor voice. He was a choral scholar at this college, and later a leading member of Cambridge Voices, who join us in the chapel today. When the registrar was arranging the registrar's conference in Cambridge and needed to lay on some entertainment, one phone call to Antony produced 18 singers, including him, who sang brilliantly for their supper. When there was no formal concert to be sung, he sang anyway. If you worked in the development office and it was your birthday, You were guaranteed a round of happy birthday, kick-started by Anthony. And at this time of year, Trumpington Street would echo, should echo, to a development team press-ganged into impromptu Christmas carols. I began by saying that Anthony would give himself no credit for the transformation of the Fitzwilliam. And the intricacies of teamwork make that understandable. No one person could or should take sole credit for such a thing. But I don't believe that Anthony quite understood, or himself believed either, how much he was loved within this community. It is my hope that in these last few months, when he has constantly been in our thoughts and our hearts, and a steady stream of friends and colleagues have quietly made their way to Clarendon Street, he came to see the breadth and the depth of the affection so many have and have for him in this community. Cambridge has lost an effortless ambassador, and we have lost a friend. But Anthony's contributions to Cambridge and to our lives will endure.